Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Lots and lots of very, very strange news. Of course, coming out of Israel, there's the Shin Bet story, which makes me distinctly uncomfortable. But maybe it is a story that has to be aired publicly, and this all has to come out. And then, of course, there is the actual Hamas-Israel situation. Every time we see it getting closer to resolution, it seems to move further away. Then we saw a situation around Hamas offering the Israeli Americans. Was that to placate Trump? What is really going on the ground? Well, no stranger to us here at Chai FM, Major Andrew Fox. He is a former British Army officer. He joins us this morning. Thank you for doing so. How are you today?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. You're the first conversation I've had with someone since I woke up, so I'm starting my day right.
Wow. Exactly. It can, well, or it can only get better, if you know what I mean. Right. So that's the other way of looking at it. So, Andrew, it's become impossible to follow this. We have no clue about what is actually happening with phase one, phase two, extension of phase one, ultimatums, non-ultimatums. Can you help us make sense of it?
Yeah, sure. So if we look at phase one in the entirety, essentially it was a return of hostages in exchange for Palestinian prisoners and a partial withdrawal from the Gaza Strip by the IDF. It's that straightforward.
Right.
And that happened relatively well. There's a significant number of hostages came out. Obviously, a huge number of many unpleasant people were released from Israeli jails in exchange, which is suboptimal, I think, as the deal goes. But that hostage situation always gave Hamas huge leverage over Israel, unfortunately. I think it's also important to remember that phase one came about because it was ordered by President Trump. You know, there were stories of Steve Witkoff, the envoy, kicking Bibi out of his Shabbat. To go and actually negotiate and do as he was told, effectively. So this is Trump ordered, and Trump came to power saying that he was going to bring, you know, peace to the Middle East. Now, phase two was the more interesting phase. Now, I was always suspicious that it wasn't going to succeed because that was where further negotiations were to work out who was going to replace Hamas in Gaza. And, of course, that essentially requires Hamas to agree to their own demise.
To leave, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, to leave or stay there and remain potentially as terrorists will be targeted by the IDF. So I'm not surprised that the negotiations for this phase aren't working, and they're trying everything, as you say. So they initially tried Israeli negotiators, and in recent weeks, American negotiators have been negotiating over Bibi's head, which is interesting. And still to no success. And on a very basic human level, it makes sense. Why on earth would Hamas agree to their own demise? And especially when they retain hostages that do give them so much leverage. So we're now stuck in this frozen impasse.
Right. And do you think then that what is required then to get Hamas into that situation? Is it really about their freedom? Is it about their survival? Or are they true to their manifesto and will go down fighting?
I mean, it's very hard to give an accurate prediction at this point, but we can look at a few different factors. The first thing I would pull out is that, sort of in general, and I don't want to be too general about ways of thinking, but there are enough historical precedents that we can say it's a thing. Arabs tend to think in generations rather than in electoral cycles in the way that we do. And that gives them a bit of an upper hand here, I think, because they're essentially playing for time because they think they have a lot of time. A lot of their campaign over this last 17, 18 months has been to try and degrade Israel on the international stage, to undermine Israel's legitimacy as a state, to try and isolate Israel from other countries in the world. And I think, given how targeted on youth their campaign has been, they're thinking, hey, we can wait 10, 15 years and then the next leaderships might not be so amenable to Israel. So all they're doing is stalling for as much time as possible, I suspect. And on the other side, on the Israeli side, obviously there's huge political unrest. Bibi is balancing a sort of six-way tightrope
between keeping his coalition in government, between keeping Mr. Trump happy, between balancing some delicate security situations around the region with Syria, Lebanon, Iran, and the judicial stuff that's going on with the trial that he's under, the sacking of Shin Bet's leader and the attorney general. You know, there's all kinds of stuff that Bibi's got balancing here, and Gaza's probably for him a relatively small part of that bigger puzzle.
Does he appreciate, do you think, the fact that he isn't just at he isn't just a target, but that there is also some legitimacy in the criticism of him?
Does Bibi accept that? I'm not sure he's particularly
introspective,
amenable to criticism. Yeah, I don't think exactly that.
Right.
But no, I think he's doing what all politicians do and thinking of his own survival to an extent. You know, I met Bibi last year.
Yes.
And it was a really interesting experience. I mean, I've never met anyone more charismatic. I mean, the way that guy held a room of only sort of 12 people,
it's so
was really, really impressive.
Yeah.
But on the same token, I left the meeting thinking that I would never buy a second-hand car from
him. It's just so funny because I had a very similar experience. I happened to be met him with a group of Americans who were quite left-wing and very, very critical, and you know, they came into the meeting quite rigid and angry. And by the time we walked out, they were all like, "Oh, Bibi," and I thought, "Like, you idiots!" Like, he turned the room. I've never actually seen anything like it. It was very impressive on some level.
Yeah, well, he's a consummate political operator, and I think at some point that politicking is going to trip him up, and we might be approaching that point, I suspect.
The fact is, though, that Shin Bet definitely has they've dropped the ball as well. There's no doubting that. And what concerns me here is there probably isn't a perfect answer as to whether it was him, whether it was them. It's probably I'm sure it was a combination of many things. But unless everybody is actually prepared to look honestly at the situation, we will never really get to it, will we?
No, and you know, ultimately the buck stops at the top. And the fact that this happened on Bibi's watch means that, you know, a responsible leader would take a degree of responsibility. And there's going to be that eternal debate in Israel, I suspect, about when accountability for 7th of October needs to happen. You know, should they have all resigned the next day? But then you'd have left Israel leaderless and people stepping up in the middle of a war. Or is after the war's finished, i.e. essentially now, it's certainly paused if not finished, is now the time to start holding people accountable. And we've seen a number of generals move on, like Herzi Halevi's moved on. I think Fetterman moved on as well down in Southern Command. But still, I might be wrong on that, I have to check. But you know, this is the time when these reports are coming out about what happened on 7th of October, what happened in the kibbutzim. And they make pretty pleasant reading for the IDF and for the security services. So, you know, I think we're close to a time now where people do need to start taking that accountability.
So your view is that there needs to be, now is the time for those resignations?
I think now is the time to be publishing these reports. And when the reports come out, if they place blame in a certain place, then I think the honourable thing to do would be to accept that you've done your best to atone for the last 17, 18 months and then fall on your sword. Personally, that's what I would do.
And in terms of Hamas, is now the time to put military pressure on them, political? What would your strategy be if you were making that decision?
Look, I don't think Trump is going to allow full-scale military operations. He was elected on the back of being this great peacemaker, and we're seeing him do all sorts of desperately unethical things with Ukraine to force them to cease fire. I think the last thing he wants is a resumption of full-scale combat operations in Gaza with all the international screeching that would come with that. So whilst I think there's a degree of sense to resuming military operations if Hamas won't release any more hostages, I don't think Israel is going to be allowed to do that for now. Whether the White House changes its mind where it becomes clear that Hamas aren't going to play ball, no matter how many blustering threats Mr. Trump makes on Truth Social, that situation might change. But for now, I think it's frozen on America's direction, and there aren't really any military options on the table.
Do you think that Israel has the appetite to go back into a full-scale operation in Gaza?
I think the hostages are still totemic. I think they are still the key factor here for Israeli society generally. Not that I can speak for Israeli society. I'm just making an assessment of what I've seen, what I hear from my friends. I think while there's a chance of hostage release, I think it'd be criminal not to keep that going. And of course, the IDF is making the most of this time to reconstitute, to rearm, to give people who've been mobilized for so many days the rest that they need. But I think should it come to the point where Israel has to go back in, I think the IDF are capable and ready.
Yeah, and that is where we leave it. Thank you as always. I hope that your first conversation of the day was all it was cracked up to be. Major Andrew Fox, he's a former British Army officer. He's become very much one of the experts on the Hamas war, having traveled to Israel many, many times, watching the war very closely, commenting on it. And we wanted to get his perspective. Just